May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer.
Amen. I suppose for lots of us, Epiphany just means the 6th of January,
when
we remember the wise men coming to see Jesus.
But of course, Epiphany carries on through till Candlemas,
till the 2nd of February. And so we are now in the third Sunday of Epiphany. What does Epiphany mean? If somebody says, I've had an Epiphany,
what does it mean? I suppose a way we might say is, I've seen the light. I've seen it. I've understood. I know. And certainly in Christian context and in religious context, it's about an experience of God. It's about one of those moments,
I suppose, like Paul had on the road to Damascus, where there's a massive light and you just get it.
Has it clicked with you? Has faith made sense for you? Do you know why you're a Christian? Do you have that light in your life? I don't think it is just a one-off, even for Paul.
It's something that happens at each stage of our life, at different times in our life, that we have to go through that thing and think, why am I doing this? Why here this morning? What does it mean to be in relationship with Jesus, with God, with being a Christian? We'll come back to that. For Isaiah, understanding being a person of God was very much about listening to God and recognizing God's power and God's greatness and how the whole world was really in God's hands, and that we couldn't do very much unless we were listening to God and walking with him. That reading that we have so often at Christmas, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. We have today from Isaiah 9, and we also have Matthew quoting it about Jesus. And it's really interesting, well, for me, so I hope it's interesting for you, to look at those terms, the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, and to think about for Isaiah why that was important. And that might help us to understand a little bit what's going on. So, in Isaiah's time, there was a lot of trouble from Assyria, and then sometimes Babylon in different bits of the different Isaiah, because Isaiah covers a long period. And other times, not in Isaiah, there were problems from Egypt. Now, I want you to imagine the land of Israel. So you've got the Mediterranean over this side, and then you've sort of got a square off. You've got the Mediterranean, and then you've got, if you remember from your geography, you've got the Sea of Galilee at the top, and then a river going down, and you've got the Dead Sea at the bottom. Can you remember that kind of picture? Okay? And down here is Egypt. And actually, from geography, there's this whole swathe of land that has got water that goes all the way around over to what is now Iraq and Iran and Persia and all of that kind of place, which was called the Fertile Crescent. And it was where all of the people travelled, because it wasn't desert, it was fertile. Now, at the very top, where the Sea of Galilee is, just above it, were the tribes of where most of the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali kept themselves, lived. So when the Assyrian army came attacking, who did they get first? The tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali. And actually, they were the ones that quite often the Assyrian army stopped. They'd conquered enough. It was awful. It was terrible. And everybody else looked and said, those people in darkness, and those people who were up there thought God had deserted them.
Life was awful. They were under rule, they were under power, they weren't managing, they weren't coping, some of them had been taken away, some of them were staying. It was awful. And Isaiah comes into that situation and says, the people who are in gloom and darkness will see a great light. And if you go to chapter 8, just before we've been reading, what he points out is that they've given up on God. Instead of looking to God for help, they were looking to all sorts of other ways. They were looking for mediums. They were asking spirits of the dead. They were going to people to ask them for, and they weren't any longer listening to God. And Isaiah says, the people have suddenly got it. They've seen a light. God has broken in. And it will be like, and you've heard this every Christmas, the times of Midian. So what's that all about? Do you remember the story of Gideon? Do you remember it? If you don't, go back to Judges and read that story. I haven't got time to tell it all to you now, and it is a brilliant story, so read it. There's this guy called Gideon. He's young, he's from the lowest tribe, the least important tribe of all of the tribes, and because the Midianites were coming attacking, there's lots of war and trouble, because the Midianites were coming and attacking them, he was hiding in the wine press to reap his corn and to get his corn going. And he was hiding there. And God appears to him, well, an angel appears to him, and says, you're going to be one to save Israel. And there's a wonderful story about how he listens to God and how he sorts it. But he ends up getting a big army. He gets this massive army. And God says, no, you're going to do this in my strength, not in the strength of the army. And so he goes down to literally just hundreds of soldiers. And the soldiers completely save them. How? By virtually doing nothing. They hide on the hills around where the Midianites are camping in the night. And in the middle of the night, they wake them up. They smash pots and have torches and they shout. They shout for God. And they shout for God and for Israel. And the Midianites are so frightened, they wake up and they start killing each other and running away. And the whole of Israel is saved. How? By Gideon? By the Israelite army? By listening to God. The people who have walked in darkness have seen a great light. How? Because they listened to God. And Matthew reminds us, and we hear it every Christmas, that actually the light of God has come in Jesus to change things, to remind us that we don't do it in our own strength. We do things in God's strength. That we do things and that there can be hope. Peter, James, and John had a moment when it, and Andrew, had a moment when it all clicked. We don't know. And if you look at the different gospel stories, whether this was the first time they'd met Jesus, or whether they'd met Jesus before, whether they'd heard things or whatever, whether they had a relationship. But one day, in the reading we had, Jesus walks along and he says, come and follow me. And to Simon and Andrew, because he's not yet Peter, to Simon and Andrew, he says, come and follow me, and I will make you fishers of people. It's that moment that they decide. It's that moment that the four of them leave their nets, leave everything they're doing, leave their family. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to us
just to do that. In those days, that was their family's livelihood. Not just money, but food,
everything that they were. And suddenly, they are moving to that point where they're no longer trusting in the things of this world, but they're moving to a point where God is calling them through Jesus to follow.
In 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about the need for us to follow Christ and that it doesn't make sense to the world. He talks a lot about division and disagreement there too. It'd be worth us looking at and thinking about. But the bit I really want us to think about today is about wisdom as well, enlightenment. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. The light has shone. It makes sense to the people who can see it.
But it doesn't make sense to those who don't believe. It doesn't make sense to those around. It didn't make sense, the disciples leaving. It didn't make sense. But Paul says it's not about having a good argument. In fact, he says, if you have a good argument, if you have great words, this is Paul speaking, then literally you're taking the power away from God. Because it's not about you having the right words. It's not about you persuading. It's about allowing God to work. We might think that the disciples were being called to be fishers of men, and that was about proclaiming the gospel. And you might think that that links with the Corinthians passage, because Paul says, I was called to proclaim the gospel. Well, that's our English translation of it. But actually, the Greek word is just one word, and it doesn't have that proclaim in the middle of it. It just means to gospel. To gospel. To good news. I wonder what it means in our lives to be the gospel. For Paul, it very definitely was a call to preach it, but it was also to live it. What does it mean for you and me to gospel, to be good news to the people around us? So what about you and me? Isaiah reminds us, in a time of darkness and hope, and lack of hope, that there is a way for hope if we turn to God. I don't know where you are personally at this moment, but I know many of us walk in moments of darkness. As we think about the Holocaust, you can hear stories of people through those times who saw hope, not in what was going on around, but in God and all that was God could give. And all of our readings today remind us that God will reveal his light. God's light will shine and reveal the way of hope. The Gospel of Matthew reminds us what that might look like in the way that we live our lives as well. So let's look at it in a slightly different way as well. How would you describe yourself? I'm not going to get you to do it. I have in the past, I know, got you to talk to one another, but it's a bit much, isn't it? But who are you? When you walk up to somebody and you meet them for the first time and you shake your hands and you say, hello, who are you? You say your name, and then hugely often in Britain we say, what do you do? And we can end up telling the bishop, apparently, the church we go to and all the things that we do in church. Or we can tell them the job that we do. Or we can say quite often, oh, I don't do anything, I'm just retired, or I'm just a mum, or I'm just... But that's not who we are. Who are you? Are you somebody who loves baking or gardening, or are you somebody who works and has got real gifts in a particular way, or doesn't work and has those gifts? What are your gifts? What are the things that you do that make you you? Are you somebody who welcomes people? Are you creative? Are you a musician? Are you a prayer? What is it that is you? And how can you use that to gospel? To bring God's light and life and hope into the community around you. Really fascinating reading that I was given this week that made me begin to think about what it meant to be a fisher of people, or a fisher of men, as we learnt it as children. So there's James and John and Andrew and Simon. And they are fishing. And Jesus comes along and says to them, well, at least he says it to Andrew and Simon. He doesn't say it to James and John. He says, come with me, and instead of being fishermen, I'm going to make you fish for people. Does he say it to any of the other disciples? No, he doesn't even say it to James and John. To others, he says, come and follow me. So, you, is God going to call you to be a fisherman? Probably not. But God is going to call you to step out of your comfort zone, not just to sit back and carry on as usual, but to be the person you are for God. To use the gifts that you've got. And yes, sometimes that will be to move direction and to do something completely different that will seem crazy to the rest of the world. But not everybody. In fact, sometimes Jesus, do you remember the story of Legion, the Gadarene demoniac? He said, can I come and follow you? And Jesus said, no, go home. Go and tell people at home what you've got to do. So it's different with everybody. So what does it mean for you and me to garden, to gospel, as an administrator, as a gardener, as a baker, as a dreamer, as an artist, as a musician, as a shop steward, as a mum, as a student, as a granddad, as a sister, as a brother? What does it mean? Can you consider what you do as bringing light to the world? And do you allow God's goodness to do it? Or do you think you've got to do it all in your own strength? And what does it actually mean? What did Jesus mean? So if you look at your collect for today, so the prayer for today on your sheet, it comes from a beautiful part of Isaiah, but it was so beautiful that Jesus took it as his message of what he wanted to do. And this is Jesus' gospel. And I hope that you will take this home this week. So whoever's cluttering up the notices at the end, don't let anybody take that white sheet and give it back to you. Take it home with you and use it to pray. Okay, and take that prayer and think, how am I going to do this? So Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and let the oppressed go free. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. What does that look like in your life this week? Who needs the light of God to come and shine? It doesn't mean you've got to go in and save them in any way whatsoever. But it does mean for you to look at the world around you and say, how is God wanting to work in this place? And let me be part of that.